that unless we have to.
Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Flory, Judge Johnson, Judge Hooten, the Honorable James B. Flory presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have six matters on our calendar today. Four are for oral argument this morning. We'll take them in the order that they appear on the calendar. Counsel, when I call the case, I'm sure you know our rules and your time limits, but you each have 15 minutes for your principal arguments. An appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And please identify yourselves for us for the record when you begin your argument. So the first case is A190999, State of Minnesota by Smart Growth Minneapolis versus the City of Minneapolis. Counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Jack Perry from the Briggs & Morgan Law Firm, soon to be Taft Law Firm, in a couple weeks. And I'm here with Tim Keene and Nakima Levy Pounds / Armstrong. We represent the appellants. And this is an appeal from the District Court's Rule 12 dismissal of the states. We are state of Minnesota by the appellants. Our mirror challenge to the city's 2040 plan. The facts are undisputed under Rule 12. At issue is the city's two legal arguments, legal defenses. Jumping right into those legal defenses, the first legal defense that the city has is that the city's 2040 plan is, as a matter of law, not subject to MIRA. And by my read of their arguments, they have two very distinct arguments, and their lead argument is that the EQB enacted restrictions on MIPA required environmental reviews apply to MIRA. And the two specific restrictions are 4410, 4620, subpart 26, the exemption for comp plans or governmental activities, which include comp plans, and 4410.0200, subpart 26, which requires MIPA environmental reviews to be for a project. There are three fatal problems with this first argument by the city. Each one standing alone bars this argument. The first is that EQB's restrictions.
Mr. Perry, before you go through 1, 2, 3, could I ask a question that might help with respect to all three? Are you challenging in any way the validity of those two rules that you mentioned?
No, not at all, Your Honor.
So they are valid rules. Okay, I go ahead and proceed. Yeah.
The only argument we have is that they only apply to MIPA by case law, by rule, and by statute.
But the request that you seek and your prayer for relief and your complaint is basically the environmental reviews, either an EAW, EIS, or AUAR.
That is the spin that the city has. The relief we are seeking is simply the application of the shifting burdens of proof under MIRA. And how the city satisfies its burden is up to the city. We identify as one way they could do it, like the city of Moorhead on October 17, 2018, they had three very, very slimmer 2040 growth area plans.
But didn't that relate to a specific project, Mr. Perry, as opposed to the approval of an overall plan?
No. The Moorhead one, it covered, 26 square miles and I think 17,000 square acres. It was no plan at all. It is virtually identical in geographic scope to what we have here. It was a plan done by an outside consultant as to how do you plan the city of Moorhead.
If we accept your position on these issues, though, doesn't that open up any statutorily mandated comprehensive planning by any community to have to undergo environmental review or could be challenged for lack of doing that? It seems that creates a huge area of litigation potentially for cities that isn't specifically laid out or allowed by the legislature in the way they've set up this scheme of laws, I guess, that govern this.
And Your Honor, my response to that is that may or may not be true. I don't think it's true. The reason we have this one is because the city of Minneapolis has, right or wrong, they have adopted the most aggressive urban densification plan ever adopted by any major metropolitan area. So to say that, well, here, if we apply it here, it's going to apply elsewhere, I think is unfair. But I don't think you get to a policy issue. I don't think this court has discretion. The first reason is that the rules that we are looking at, the exemption and the project, which you referred to, both of which are valid, Your Honor, they cannot, as a matter of law, apply to MIRA. And the first reason is that the authorization to pass those under 116D04 subdivision 5A, it was restricted to the adoption of rules by the EQB that are applicable to MIPA, not MIRA. And the In re Hubbard case, the Supreme Court decision in 2010 at page 318, prohibits, the language of the court says, neither an agency nor the courts may enlarge the agency's powers beyond that which was contemplated by the legislative body. And here, the legislative authorization that allowed them to pass the rules were restricted, and if you read the statute very, very clearly, it's limited to MIPA. Second of all is that this idea of will we open the floodgates was addressed shortly after all these environmental statutes were passed in 1971 MIRA and then 1973. We have MIPA and we have PPSA and a couple others. The Supreme Court addressed this in kind of perversely in the exact opposite scenario where they'd already gone through an exhaustive EIS for a transmission line, and the Environmental Quality Board and NSP said, we can't be subject to MIRA. What's left? We've already gone through the most strenuous environmental review possible under MIPA and under the Power Plant Siting Act. What's left to do? And the Supreme Court said on page 865, 866, and this is the controlling law for this case, says we need to harmonize these environmental statutes. But it harmonized it not the way the city wants, where you say, well, we've already done it. They said, no. Harmonizing is we are going to give meaning to all of these statutes. And that's what they did. So even though the power line had gone through, the routing had gone through the most extreme environmental review you could possibly have under MIPA and the Power Plant Siting Act, it was still allowed to be a challenge under MIRA.
Well, so, can I ask you this? Yeah. I mean, and I often... I do this in order to understand how all of these statutes and rules are meant to work together. What is your understanding of why comprehensive plans would be exempt under the rule? Because that's very specific and it's very clear that was meant to be exempt. And as a follow-up question to that, if we adopt your position, wouldn't that basically moot the rule?
No.
Okay.
And here's why.
But first answer my first question, then go into the second.
I think the rationale is consistent with what Judge Flory said. It was they wanted to protect. They don't want to have the floodgates open for every time you do any governmental activity, because it's plans are just under the definition of governmental activities, which includes virtually everything the government does. So they don't want comprehensive plans for everything under MIPA. But what the Supreme Court said is that, and this is critical, is on page 866, it said two things. It said that the only time MIRA can be limited is if there is a, quote, express statutory language end of quote, exempting it. We don't have that. And then it goes on to address Judge Hooten. I think what you're getting at is it said, indeed, MIRA has both a, quote, procedural protections, end of quote, and B, quote, delineation of the substantive environmental rights, end of quote. In other words, MIRA is different according to the Supreme Court that interpreted these statutes contemporaneous with their enactment, and the procedural protections are we get to come to court, and the substantive protections are we get to the opportunity to show that we can satisfy the prima facie showing. If we can't do that, and I think in most cases, on most comp plans, most governmental activities, you cannot prove that. In this case, we think we can, and we think we have, and then that shifts the burden, which is completely different than what you have in our MIPA. And in fact, this court in 1997 in the White v. DNR case did something critical, is that it affirmed what took place in the Peer case and said that even though you have this MIPA, you were still going to allow a MIRA case to go forward, and this is a trail. But it said to further reinforce that, they said that there's a huge difference between what happens in MIPA versus what happens in MIRA, substantive part, which is what your question was, I think, Judge Hooten. Sorry if I'm long-winded on this, but substantively it's different because in MIPA you are looking at a governmental decision and the record is closed. MIRA, you get to have de novo review, and in fact our exit report wasn't submitted to the city during the decision-making time period. So it would be excluded under MIPA, but it is allowed under MIRA because of this court's decision in 1997.
Seems to me that the purpose of your suit, the relief, the practical relief that you want is stated in paragraphs 3 and 4 of your prayer relief at pages 38 and 39 of your complaint. You want an injunction, I mean, I'm paraphrasing a bit, an injunction enjoining the approval of the plan unless the city engages in environmental review. And based on the way, is that correct? That's basically your point?
Yes, but I'm going to clarify because and I may have been too loose in the language in the complaint, but it's got to be read most favorable to me. But,
well, I paraphrase.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But environmental review under MIPA is different than environmental scrutiny. I've tried to change the terminology. Is what we're seeking is that they are doing this massive urban densification. Maybe good, maybe bad environmentally, public policy, whatever. We are asking for environmental scrutiny of that because we think we have made a prima facie showing that there are intense material adverse environmental impacts if that is approved. Because there are no subsequent discretionary approvals necessary for the build-out of nearly 150,000 residential units.
So the paragraphs 3 and 4 refer specifically to EIS or AUAR, but in any event,
But I say including those. Those are examples. They are not intended as that's what we're asking for. You can do whatever you want.
But the things you've asked for are things that a different law says are completely unnecessary, that there's no obligation, no legal requirement of environmental review upon the approval of a comprehensive plan. Right?
I don't think that's a fair reading of what I have. And I apologize if I was unclear in my complaint. It was my words. But we are asking for the exact relief under MIRA. And how they satisfy their shifting burden, Your Honor, is up to them.
But the relief you asked for under MIRA is something that is under the law. It's unnecessary, and perhaps even there's an exemption from doing environmental review for this type of activity.
That is not true at all, because, again, once we satisfy our prima facie showing of a likely material adverse impact, which we have done with our expert report, they can't say otherwise. Once we do that, the burden shifts where they have to either prove that wrong or they have to have an affirmative defense. Your Honor, we don't care how they satisfy it. We're not asking for an AUAR. We're not asking for an EIS. That is completely up to them.
When you're talking about the shifting of burdens, I think you're talking about the manner of proof of the claims, proof of defenses, and so on. But does any of that really matter if the ultimate relief that's requested cannot be awarded?
That is not true. What you're saying is not true. The relief that we are asking is what is prescribed by the Minnesota Supreme Court, which you cannot, under the Minnesota Supreme Court, is what happens in MEPA is irrelevant. MIRA allows us to go forward separate and apart from anything under MEPA. And we get to go forward under MEPA, and if we satisfy our burden, then the burden shifts to them. And the district court did not have to, we are not asking to say, you, city, need to do an EIS, AUAR, anything required under the MEPA statute.
So maybe
we are simply saying you have to satisfy your burden, which is under 116B04.
Maybe the difference in what I'm thinking and what you're thinking is that I'm assuming that we are always applying both of these statutes, and you, is it your position that we set MEPA to the side completely? We apply MIRA and only MIRA, and we ignore all provisions in MEPA and its rules?
Your Honor, my time's up. Can I answer that?
I can answer that, and I have an additional question for you, too, when we're done with this, so
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, I just don't want to break the rules.
Well, so. I would ask that you be timely in your answers.
Yeah. Judge Johnson, first yours, as I'm going to cite, I think it's on page 865 of the Peer case, could be 866, but the Supreme Court dictates how this court proceeds with this case, I believe, because there's been no change to Peer. And Peer says that they need to, quote, harmonize by giving meaning to each. In other words, these have to be cumulative. So whatever happens in MEPA happens under MEPA. And with the routing, you do EIS. In this case, you do nothing under MEPA. That is separate and apart from MIRA. Is that answer?
Well, the quote you read from Peer seems consistent with what I was saying, that we try to apply all of these laws to the extent that they apply and are not in conflict. I suppose if they're in conflict, we have to interpret them in a way that that preserves what we can. And
right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Judge
so
Flory.
15 minutes goes by fast, and this question is a little unfair, and you can address it in rebuttal if you need to also, because I don't want to extend this too much. But I think I'm getting to the second part of your argument that we never let you get to here today, and that is whether you've made a prima facie case to begin with. And my question is, how is the approval of and comprehensive plan, be without any specific projects in it, whether it be this one or any other one, how does that approval cause pollution, which I think is the causation issue that you need to show in your prima facie showing? I mean, I know you have an expert that says that there's these potential effects, but quite frankly, they seem kind of attenuated and speculative because there's nothing specific about them to address.
I'll give a quick answer, and then if that's fine.
I assume the city will talk about that, and you can address it in your rebuttal also.
The two things is, one is the expert opinion was based upon the exact number of housing units that were allowed, which is nearly 150,000, and which
assuming a full build-out.
Full build-out, 150, but even she also used what is, quote, expected, to use the words of the city, mm-hmm. Which is 48,908, and used that number to show what the impact would be. Now, the question you ask, Judge Flory, is obviously the heart of the second issue, and it has been addressed in 2004 and 2011 by the Michigan Supreme Court, and the Peer case and a couple other cases have relied upon Michigan, because Michigan is the one that first drafted they call it MEPA, but they first drafted MIRA. We adopted almost wholesale, and so we have looked as a judicial body to Michigan. And Michigan first said in 2004 exactly what your concern is, and said, and that's in the Preserve the Dunes case, which the city relies upon, They reversed themselves in 2010 and said, the statutory purpose of MEPA, MIRA, is to have broad environmental protections, and they adopted what I would summarize as a but-for test, is that but for this approval of whatever governmental activity, whether it's zoning, comp plan, or an order, but for that, then these environmental impacts would not happen. And so they've addressed that, but the reason you're struggling with is the same reason their court went, and it's their very colorful majority and dissenting opinions, because they literally reversed themselves within 7 years. But that is the case, and the case that I relied on is the Anglers case. Anglers, Saber, whatever, I'm not sure I can give you the citation, but so that's the issue, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, Mr. Perry.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Yvonne Ludmer. I am Assistant City Attorney for the City of Minneapolis. I suppose I'll start just with a quick rebuttal to the last point that council made. The Anglers case was not reviewing anything like the comprehensive plan here. That case reviewed issuance of a specific permit to discharge treated water into wetlands and an easement to construct a pipeline. That's a specific identifiable project of the type that no one is contesting is reviewable under MIRA. Turning to the assumption, whether it's an assumption of full build out, immediate assumption of full build out, which in their reply brief at page 21, Smart Growth admits that the alleged prima facie case was based on that assumption of immediate and full build out. But there's no such assumption required or even contemplated under MIRA. That is that what they call the legally required assumption is something that they draw from MEPA, which elsewhere they argue has zero application here. And that assumption applies when considering a threshold number of units, quote, on contiguous land owned or under an option to purchase by the proposer. That assumption has no place here where A, this is a MIRA claim, and B, the City of Minneapolis does not own all the land in the city and does not have an option to purchase it. It also would require, taking that assumption either of immediate full build out or the immediate partial build out, would require this court to find under MIRA that is a likeliness of the cause of causing adverse material effects. So in other words, the question would be, is it likely that the day after implementation of the plan, every, say, single-family home in Minneapolis will fall down and a triplex will sprout up in its place? I don't think that that is likely. I can turn now to the an item that was discussed initially. Creating a comprehensive plan is not a voluntary activity of a city, nor the contents chosen at its discretion. It's a creation of state law that requires metropolitan area cities to create comprehensive plans using guidelines set by the Metropolitan Council and which are reviewed by the Met Council as specified by the legislature. In preparing its comprehensive plan, the City of Minneapolis had to comply with requirements imposed by the Met Council to ensure conformance with its regional plans, consistency with its adopted policies, and compatibility across metropolitan areas. Those are the areas of review that the legislature set for comprehensive plans, and they assigned that review to the Metropolitan Council. Nowhere did the state impose environmental review for these plans, and review of them is expressly exempted under MEPA because, and this answers the question I think that you had earlier, Judge Johnson, they're exempted because the only effects that they might have are indirect and remote, and environmental review, as recognized by the EQB and others, is more reasonable at the point of implementation. In this case, appellants raised the example of the state of Washington. I think that proves the point very well, because the state of Washington enacted a comprehensive regime for its environmental review of these plans. And that environmental review included higher-level theoretical review that would be possible when all you're working with are projections and assumptions. And the state did not provide for that. Instead, Minnesota specifically exempted it from MEPA, which governs environmental review of governmental activity. And granting the relief requested here, whether it's an injunction preventing the implementation of the plan, whether it's for the environmental review asked for in the complaint or for something else. It would expose the city to significant contradictory legal obligations and exposures, as any injunction would prevent it from adopting a plan which is specifically required within certain timeframes under Minnesota Statute 473.175, and the Met Council has specific authorization to sue the city in civil proceedings to force it to adopt plans if the city doesn't timely adopt those plans. This is a completely novel challenge. There has been no challenge under MIRA to any high-level zoning scheme, despite what plaintiffs say in Stancil. The Stancil zoning change was to allow two specific big-box stores in a specific place. There's been no MIRA challenge to any high-level zoning scheme. There's been no MIRA challenge to any comprehensive plan. In fact, all MIRA challenges are to the types of projects that the city has been arguing is what MIRA applies to. Shovel-ready, where you can identify the possible effects, where you can identify the actual effects that it will have, and you can answer all the questions that you would need to know what kind of materially adverse environmental effects there would be.
So do you agree or would you concede that if the population of, if Minneapolis were twice as dense or three times as dense as it is now, that might have some impact on, for example, air quality?
If the city of Minneapolis is, and I apologize, are you referring to if the city of Minneapolis's population doubled?
At some point, with increased density, with more people, with more vehicles, isn't it true that there might be measurable decreases in air quality because of that density?
Well, I mean, as the Supreme Court recognized in Schaller, any human activity does come with effects on the environment. The more human activity you have, say, in Minneapolis, the more effects you would have on the environment in Minneapolis. But if it would have less environmental effect on the environment than if you just doubled the population. If you had that increase in population across the state as opposed to just in the city of Minneapolis.
But if further development happens incrementally over years and decades, I mean, at what point, and of course this increased development would be multiple developers, builders, property owners, and so on, it would be the accumulation of many individual actions by individual persons and companies and so on. So at what point, I mean, as a practical matter, I'm not sure how a person would challenge this or would seek to. It's a slippery slope. I'm not sure how a person would ever, as a practical matter, come in and say, stop. The air quality is now at a certain threshold. We can't allow it to get any worse. I mean, can you play out for me how air quality could be protected in the future if it ever did get beyond to a point where it would violate MIRA?
I mean, I think that question, thank you for that. I think it's an important consideration, but I think that question might prove too much. Because the Metropolitan Council tells the cities and counties across the metro area, we expect in the metro area a certain amount of growth in population. We're allocating to you, this particular city, the responsibility to create housing, to create infrastructure, to accept this much part of it. Would you be able to sue the Metropolitan Council and say, hey, we don't want you to allow that many people into this metropolitan area? We're a step down from that, sue the city to say, we don't want you to be able to accommodate more people.
I'm going back to, you argued a minute ago that the reason why we have exemptions for comprehensive plans is because projects are best challenged at the point, or at the point of implementation or at the point of action. But I mean, can you give me an example of how that would practically work? It seems like we have the problem of the straw that breaks the camel's back. I mean, how can a person seek an injunction just before that straw?
Well, so the system is the comprehensive plan would pass. The city would then pass, zoning to new zoning laws to conform with that plan and to address holes in that plan. For example, impervious service area is not covered in the comprehensive plan. And then then you get to the point where the projects, the individual projects, are approved or not, and that is the point at which environmental review is permitted in Minnesota's scheme. And MEPA does include the ability to...
So it would be like if there's a particular person seeking a building permit to build an apartment building on a particular corner, that would be, I mean, that particular project has to be challenged, or it has to be challenged at that time?
Yes, Your Honor, that's the scheme that is in place right now. If the legislature wanted to provide for review at a higher, more theoretical projected level, then it could enact a scheme like Washington's. But right now, the scheme that we have is you look at those individual developments, and under MEPA, when the approvals are issued for that, there are provisions to allow looking at cumulative effects of those and similar projects on projects allowed under the comprehensive plan. So there are ways to look beyond that individual project, but yet the current scheme as set up under MIRA, which requires a showing of the likely to cause adverse material effects, is done at the project level.
Could we go back to statutory interpretation? Because I think that's really what this case is all about. And I think, and I'm sure Mr. Perry is going to correct me if I misstate what his argument is, but he's basically arguing that under MIRA, his client has expanded rights that go beyond and interface with the rights that the city may have under MEPA, and that therefore, in order to harmonize the statutes, his client should be able to raise this issue now under MIRA. Rather than wait, as Judge Johnson pointed out, until later. What is your response to that statutory interpretation?
I think that does the opposite of harmonize the statutes. I think that it shatters the effect of those statutes where MEPA governs, where MEPA covers governmental environmental review of governmental action, and MEPA MEPA applies to projects under its law, and the case law interpreting that says that's a governmental action, the results of which would cause physical manipulation of the environment directly or indirectly. And I'd like to call attention to two parts of that. One is the word cause, and that's the same word that we have in MIRA that has been our focus here. That's saying that if you know what's going to happen, 50,000 or 150,000 new units over the next 20 years, that doesn't tell you nearly enough to figure out the likely materially adverse effects when you don't know when they're going to be built, how they're going to be built, where the units are going to be built, what materials are going to be built with them. The other part of that is as MEPA applies to things that cause physical manipulation of the environment directly or indirectly, and that's a lower standard that you need to show something that is covered under MEPA than MIRA, which requires materially adverse effects. MEPA has a broader reach in that sense than MIRA. So when MEPA, as reasonably interpreted by the Environmental Quality Board, to exclude review of comprehensive plans because their effects are too remote, too indirect, and environmental review is more reasonable at the point of implementation, to turn around and say, well, but under MIRA, we can say they cause this greater harm. It reaches this higher level of causation. That would actually shatter the any kind of harmonious interpretation of the two. The better interpretation of the two is as laid out in the cases that we cited, that MIRA applies for citizens who very broadly, any citizen can bring, can say, hey, government, I don't think that you complied with your obligations under MEPA, and I'm bringing this to make you do that.
So kind of continuing on with the questions of Judges Johnson and Hooten then, assuming we agree with Mr. Perry's position that they get beyond the MEPA exemption and they get beyond the challenge to their prima facie case, so the burden is now shifted to the city. He tells us that the suit doesn't tell the city what to do. They don't have to. We're not saying they got to do an EIS or EAW or an AURA. What could the city do to rebut that presumption?
Thank you, Your Honor. And frankly, I have very little idea. For example, if we were trying to present an affirmative defense that shows that there's not a better path that we could take, what are we comparing this to? What build-outs are we comparing it to? We could say, well, if you look at, adding 50,000 new units in a single building in downtown Minneapolis, and that's how you're going to add the required new units to the Met Council, maybe that would have fewer environmental effects than if you allowed more diverse densification across the city. But we don't know what projects are going to be built. We don't know where the units are going to be built. And I don't think that there's any expert report that the city would put together would rely entirely on projections and assumptions the same way that the Sunday report did. And you'd have a battle of experts trying to guess what might happen over the next 10 to 20 years, what laws might change, and trying to figure out and trying to compare different one theoretical possibility to another, when the point of the affirmative defense is to say, this is the thing that is going to happen, and now let's compare these other possibilities to that and see which would be better. We don't have a route to say which is what is going to happen because of the stage that we're at.
Am I correct?
Oh, go ahead.
Am I correct in understanding that the exemption in Rule 4410.4600 has the effect of an environmental review that's otherwise required is not required because of the exemption, right? But would that why would that preclude a city from voluntarily performing its own environmental review? In other words, if the city wanted to, and let's say if the city council said we're really interested in the environmental impact and we want to assess that before we go forward, I mean, would the EQB's rules forbid the city from doing so?
I do think so, Your Honor, because the parts, and I see my time is up. I did have one other point I wanted to reach, and it would be very brief, but I'll answer your question first.
I think we need to answer the questions.
I will answer
briefs,
first.
But if you haven't gotten to something, we're not going to open up ground here. So,
in answer to your question, as we discussed in our briefs, the rules that govern MEPA prevent cities from undertaking even the discretionary environmental review when there's the exemption in place. A city cannot do an AUAR. The city of Minneapolis could not have decided we're going to do an AUAR for this comprehensive plan because that's exempt. They're not permitted to under that rule. And I think in footnote 7 of the reply, the Smart Growth says it is undisputed that they say it's irrelevant too. I don't think it's irrelevant. They say it's undisputed that neither mandatory nor discretionary environmental review, that the exemption prevents both mandatory and discretionary environmental review under MEPA. And then I just briefly, the Schaller case, 563, it was cited in our briefs at 267, 268. That was just another example of where a MIRA challenge was rejected for being too speculative. And I wanted to call that to Your Honor's attention.
Okay, I have a question because I want to make sure I understand your position regarding the interplay between MIRA and MEPA. And correct me if I misheard you or if I'm paraphrasing it in the wrong way, but are you claiming that MIRA's rights only extend to the point that it has the ability to confront government about whether it complied with the environmental laws? In other words, if there's compliance with the environmental laws, that's the boundaries of the authority that they have in bringing the case? What you're claiming? Are MIRA's rights broader than that? I'll be asking Mr. Perry the same question.
MIRA's rights are broader than that in that, you don't need to, you can challenge non-governmental activity under MIRA as well. But I think that the reading of Peer and then of the Association for Better Living case that we cite is that MIRA doesn't let you go beyond to challenge laws that otherwise would not be subject to environmental review under MEPA, that allows you to challenge the government's failure to comply with MEPA or other environmental laws in cases where you're saying where the government had an obligation to perform that environmental review. It doesn't create new environmental review obligations for laws that otherwise weren't subject to it.
All right, and you're claiming then, just to follow up on, to make sure I understand your position, because the comprehensive plan is exempt, then that doesn't give MIRA a basis for bringing a claim.
Is exempt, and also just the plain language of MEPA doesn't apply to it because it applies to projects, and that has been interpreted reasonably by the EQB to exempt comprehensive plans, and has also been interpreted by this court to be, you know, on the ground shovel ready projects.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ludmer. You do have 5 minutes of rebuttal, Mr. Perry.
I have 4 points I'd like to make. I'd like to start, if I may, with Judge Hooten, your series of questions about the interplay. And the argument that city makes were the same arguments that were made in 1978 by the Environmental Quality Council, now the EQB or the MPCA. And they lost. Those arguments were rejected both in 1978 in the Pier case and then rejected again in the 1997 White case by this court. And how the Supreme Court reconciled these statutes is, instead of saying, you know, trying to say, well, if we're doing the environmental review here, we don't need to do it here, they interpret them as being cumulative. And that's on page 865 and 866 of the Pier case. This court has no discretion, I believe, Your Honor, to relook at that, because there's been no change in that.
But did either of those cases involve a comprehensive plan?
No one involved in a comprehensive plan.
And did either of those cases involve an exemption for a comprehensive plan?
Did not, but the case says, the case language is that you can only limit MIRA because it's so important, because it's the granddaddy of all of these environmental statutes, the first and foremost. You can only limit it if there is expressed statutory language. That's the word of the court. There is no express statutory language, and in fact, the rule that they are relying upon is only allowed by the Hubbard case, the Supreme Court, but has precedent here, only allowed to apply to MEPA. It cannot apply to MIRA. Doesn't mean it shouldn't, Your Honor. Maybe someone should change it, but that's what we're stuck with. The second question was, Judge Flory, you asked the question about is it speculative, basically, and can government activities, approvals, what we define in Minnesota as governmental activities, which includes zoning ordinances, comp plans, and orders by governmental units, which is like a permit. And you asked the question, well, can those be subject to MIRA? And I want to go back to the Anglers case, because the Supreme Court relied upon Michigan Supreme Court. I think this court should as well. And it is not limited to just permit decisions. It's the Michigan Supreme Court said that a government activity is subject to MIRA, their version of MIRA, quote, if it serves as the trigger for environmental harm to occur. There's no question that this approval triggers the environmental harm to occur. Alternatively, government activity is subject to MIRA if it is entirely related to the environmental harm that flows therefrom, end of quote. And the significance of that is that the 48,908 residential units that they expect, their language, can only be expected if this plan is approved. But for this plan, they cannot go forward. The other point, Judge Flory, is the Sunday report not only relied upon the city's expectation, but the environmental rules to actually try to harmonize them. Both of the two mandatory EAW and EIS rules regarding residential developments, which is 4410, 4300, subpart 19, and 4410.4400, subpart 14, that's the EAW and EIS, respectively. Both of those require the following, that you have to, when you do environmental review and you try to look at what the impact is, you look at if the total number of units that may ultimately be developed. Again, may ultimately be developed. In other words, the full build-out. You have to, if you're going to scrutinize what the impact is of whatever you are deciding, whatever governmental activity is at issue, you have to look at what's the maximum, not the minimum. Also, I refer you to two other things, those two provisions also, they mandate environmental review because of the impact from residential development. They mandate environmental review, an EAW, at only 250 units. They mandate an EIS at 1,000 units, We are talking about $48,908 that they expect. And last but not least, Judge Flory, to answer your question, is 116D02 subdivision 1 is, in all caps, the Declaration of State Environmental Policy. And it provides, in subdivision 1, the legislature recognizing the profound influences of high-density urbanization. So the legislature understood in 1973 what this sort of plan would do to the environment. Doesn't mean you don't do it, it just means you gotta study it at a minimum. And you sure as heck cannot shield a plan like this from environmental scrutiny under MIRA based upon the case law.
Can I get to your relief? Because, I mean, you keep saying, I just want them to do something. I mean, are we going to be in a situation where if the city did something that you'd say that's not enough? I mean, what? It seems like you've kind of left it pretty ambiguous as to what is expected, even if you prevail on this.
Your Honor, I'm out of time. Can I?
You may answer the question.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't want to get in trouble. All they have to do is what every other MIRA defendant has done, which is they have two alternatives, and they laid out in their Rule 5606 affidavit signed by opposing counsel into the district court. They laid out what they would do in this scenario, and they would challenge, they say, the evidence that we have about the prima facie showing. Alternatively, they can show that there is no alternative, and counsel refer to this, they can show that there is no alternative. But it would not be difficult, having practiced this area for 30 years, is you can get experts on every one of the issues that we raised on, I forget which one of you talked about air pollution, I think Judge Johnson, you did. You can get an expert as to what is the impact and what can you do. Every one of these issues can be addressed proactively, prophylactically by experts. It is not difficult to do, as far as, at least procedurally.
Thank you, Mr. Perry, and thank you, counsel. Well, obviously, this case raises large issues that are difficult to discuss in 15 minutes, and certainly we've gone over that some, which is fine, but it's important for everyone to know that this case has been extensively briefed by both parties here. We have those briefs, we've reviewed them, and we'll rely on them to the extent that you haven't been able to reach arguments you wish to reach here today. We'll take the matter under advisement here today, and we'll issue a decision within 90 days. Thank you. All right.